Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, sports fans, happy Tuesday. Headlines on Softy and Dick, 3 o'clock, of course, are brought to you by our buddies at VenueKings.com.
You don't know anything. You don't know squat, you stupid idiot.
Lots of news involving the Husky basketball team. How about this? Former Garfield star Dejon Davis, after spending the last 4 years at Stanford, is coming home to transfer to Washington, joins Emmett Matthews Jr. from Wilson High School and Terrell Brown Jr. from Garfield as three local guys coming back to Seattle. Includes, by the way, two other recruits, Langston Wilson from Georgia Highlands College, the number two JUCO player in America, and also Samuel Aribi from Africa at 6'8". The transfer portal has been very, very good for Mike Hopkins so far.
Yeah, the additions have almost equaled the subtractions now. The
surpassed them, huh?
Yeah, they surpassed them now? They had six.
We'll talk. Oh, they mean just from a number standpoint.
Yeah, from a number standpoint.
I thought you meant
standpoint.
From a quality standpoint.
Oh, no. That's easy. Michigan sophomore Franz Wagner.
Who?
Franz Wagner has announced he will enter the NBA draft, the ninth-rated prospect on the board and the highest that hadn't yet declared yet.
Let's see, news from baseball. The Mariners gave up five runs in the eighth last night and lost 5-3 to Baltimore. Anthony Misevich had not allowed a run in 12 appearances, and he gave up three, a home run, a walk, and a double in the eighth inning last night. M's will do it again against the Orioles tonight, by the way, at 7:10 over at Safeco Field.
Yay!
Justin Dunn versus your guy Jorge Lopez on the mound for the Orioles.
The Sounders pulling a double switcheroo. Two home games have been rescheduled. The May 29th game against Austin, now May 30th at 6:30. The August 1st game against San Jose, now July 31st at 2 o'clock.
News in the NFL, Broncos offensive tackle Jawan James. How about this? A torn Achilles working out today away from the team facility in Colorado.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
Hey, Seattle.
This is Softy and Dick.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
To start the radio show.
Right.
You ever refer to the L.A. Chargers as the San Diego Chargers on accident?
Absolutely.
Okay. How long did it take you to get over referring to the Angels as the California Angels or the L.A. Angels of Anaheim?
What I've noticed is it usually takes me about 2 years.
Yeah.
Whether it's the Rams or the Colts or Key Arena or the Coliseum becoming Key Arena. Yeah. Usually takes me like 2 years.
Tampa Bay Devil Rays. They dropped the Devil. Right, things like that.
I think I may still call them the Devil Rays.
And there's always one jackass that will correct you. Always.
Right.
Right.
It's the Rays, man.
Safeco Field, T-Mobile Park.
Oh, I still call it Safeco sometimes.
Yeah, well, I just said Safeco in the update, and you know who the jackass was that corrected me?
Jackson?
Yeah.
I just said Safeco?
Yeah.
Really? Jackson Safeco? The jackass?
Yeah.
Kind of has a ring to
I'm
it.
I'm going to start calling you Jackson the jackass from now on.
I just think it's a good thing to be accurate on the radio.
Were you ever referred to as Jackson the jackass when you were in high school?
No, but I welcome it if this is what it constitutes being a jackass.
Well, if you keep correcting me for stupid stuff... both Dick and I are going to refer to you from now on as Jackson the Jackass. We'll just make it easy and just call you Jackass Jackson. How's that?
Safeco Field just rolls off the tongue so well that like I didn't even notice you said it.
Right. So if I said the clink, you would say, really? The clink?
Really? Did I say the word really? Did I even say it in that tongue, though?
Don't you mean Lumen Field?
Was he condescending?
No, I was not.
Very.
No, I was.
Listen,
that is.
You don't get to decide if you were condescending.
What?
I decide if you were condescending.
What?
Okay, Jackass Jackson.
That's ridiculous.
I thought you were very condescending.
I'm done for the day.
You should be done. You know what? That's a hell of an idea. Yeah. How about this? Every time he goes full Jackass Jackson, he's in timeout for the rest of the show.
Oh, we can't use the mic.
Awesome.
Mic's
cut
off.
Rest my voice for Sounders Weekly at 7.
You are in timeout for the rest of the show. So all of the fanboys out there who enjoy hearing Jackson's voice on the radio show, I got bad news for you. You're not going to get to hear it until 7 o'clock tonight.
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
Because Jackass Jackson is now in timeout for the rest of the show. We got a big one, by the way. Alex Grinch, Oklahoma defensive coordinator, former Cougar, who coached Trey Brown in college, also coached Buki Radley Hiles, who is now in the defensive backfield for UW. He will join us on the radio show at 3:20. But I got to tell you, man, it's not very often in the last couple of years or even months that we've had a reason to start the radio show with Husky basketball news. And that has happened today. Mm. And I am wondering, Dick, where this basketball program would be if not for the transfer portal. Is it possible that the transfer portal is going to change Mike Hopkins' fortunes on Montlake?
I think it will. And at first, we thought the transfer portal was going to crush Mike Hopkins at Montlake. And but if you're this is the greatest trade I've seen in college basketball in a long time. If you just bundled up what Mike Hopkins just got rid of and traded it in for Dejon Davis, Terrell Brown, Emmett Matthews, Langston Wilson, my God. I mean, it's not even close to the amount of talent that you got rid of. I mean, it far surpasses. I mean, I'm seeing on Twitter, you know, people that that cover the team now kind of saying, well, this should be an NCAA tournament team. I'm not going to go that far yet because I still don't see a star.
Yep.
But what I do see is a lot of veterans, a couple guys in Dejon Davis and Terrell Brown that played a lot of high school basketball together, so they know each other's game very, very well, and a lot of experience. A lot of guys have just been in the battles before. Davis has been in the battles. Brown, Emmett Matthews, been in the battles, been in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's exactly how you win in college basketball with veterans.
Yeah, and that's why when I mentioned this in the update and you thought that the good had outweighed the bad or whatever, I thought we're talking quality because it's a no-brainer, right? I mean, the numbers of players, I still think they have two open spots on the roster, but the quality that's come in, I don't even know who the next guy will be or who will fill those final two spots. There's rumors about maybe P.J. Fuller coming back to town, who I believe played at Garfield and Nathan Hale, is that right, with B-Roy, and went back and forth a couple times. There's rumors about him coming back. Nolan Hickman, who left Kentucky out of Eastside Catholic, I'm hearing rumors about him. Marjon Beauchamp, who played for, I think, four different high schools, three of them in Seattle, and is over, I believe, at Yakima right now. I don't know if they'll be able to get him into school or not. But
that might be
there's
tough.
There's a lot of rumors about a lot of players that will come back to town. I mean, Dejon Davis was a part of that Michael Porter Jr., Jalen Noel class. And was supposed to play at UW and then went to Stanford when Lorenzo Romar got fired. And now here he is on the way back. You mentioned Emmett Matthews at West Virginia, Terrell Brown at Arizona. I mean, these are guys that have been around some, you know, pretty decent Division I Power 5 programs. And they're coming back, and they're coming back as upperclassmen. That's what I love about this. You are bringing in guys with experience, which I think offsets the talent a little bit. The more experience you have, you can get away with not being the most athletic, get away with not being the best shooter, or maybe the best rebounder, or the best defensive player, or the best passer, because I think experience in college basketball is absolutely invaluable. The smarts that these guys are bringing with them should be able to mean something on game night next year. So I'm totally with you. You know, all these guys that left, you know, Nate Pryor, Marcus Sahonis, Eric Stevenson. Are you kidding me? I mean, this roster looks drastically better on paper now than it did 3 months ago. And then you add in the additions of guys like Quincy Pondexter, who, by the way, will join us tomorrow on the radio show at 5:20. We'll talk to Coupon, but you know, I'm not going to say either that this is an NCAA tournament team because Mike Hopkins needs to get these guys on the same page and get them on the same page fast for next year.
Yes.
But, my God, just rolling this roster out there, they should be better than they were a year ago.
Experience, I think, is the second most important thing you can have. The most important thing you can have, I think, is cohesion. Guys that have grown up in the same system together under the same coach for 3-4 years. Let's call it the Virginia thing, right?
Well, they grew up in the same city, so
they
who knows
did.
What
they did,
you know,
but like I mean, how many teams between Washington State and Virginia has Tony Bennett had with less than NBA talent? I mean,
less than
NBA talent.
Right.
But you keep a group together under the same coach for 3-4 years, and you can win a national championship even if you don't have NBA guys. Now, this is not the scenario here. They do not have that cohesion, so that's going to be the question. And the other thing they don't have is, I still don't see a lot of bigs. I mean, I'm unfamiliar with Langston Wilson. Maybe he's a guy that can step in right away. And
you know
be a,
why?
What?
You know why you're not familiar with him? Have you seen his high school numbers?
No.
You know why you haven't seen him?
No.
He doesn't have any. He didn't play high school basketball.
Okay.
Langston Wilson had a heart defect that kept him off the court until he was 18 years old. And he's been playing at Georgia Highlands Junior College. Mm-hmm. And he's the number two rated player in JUCO. So he has no high school basketball under his belt. And he's 6'9". I mean, again, this kid, Aribi, Nate Roberts, obviously
Jackson
coming
Grant.
Back. Jackson Grant at 6'10".
There's your bigs. That's it.
There's size on the roster, but
Riley
none of it's
Thorne.
None of it's proven.
Yeah, none of it's proven. And is there girth? I mean, is there strength? We know Nate Roberts looks like an Adonis, but at some point you hope that Nate Roberts starts to play like he looks on the floor. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen. It hasn't happened yet.
Well, how about that? How about the fact that Washington basketball is giving a scholarship to a kid that never played high school basketball? I mean, there's a joke in there somewhere, obviously.
Yeah.
Somebody
yeah.
will take a shot at somebody for that. You know, I know this, that Lorenzo Romar, when he gave Sam Timmons a scholarship, never saw him play in person
before
he gave him a scholarship. Because Paul Hackett told him, you got to sign this kid from New Zealand, the former Georgia Tech head coach. And he believed him. And he brought him in. And maybe that was a mistake, looking back on that, right? But
maybe so.
I think, again, when you sign a guy that never played high school basketball, he's raw and he needs coaching. And that's where a guy like Wyking Jones, who may not have been the greatest head coach at Cal, has got to make an impact. And he's got to make an impact like tomorrow on these big men.
He's the most important assistant this year. Yeah. Now, maybe Coupon and Will are more important for the future recruiting, but Wyking is the most important assistant for this year.
Well, speaking of important assistants, we won't bust his chops too hard about never winning an Apple Cup, because the guy's doing us a favor by hopping on the air and talking about Trey Brown. Alex Grinch, who is the current defensive coordinator at Oklahoma, not only coached Trey Brown, the Seahawks' fourth-round draft pick, but also coached Babuki Radley Hiles at Oklahoma, who's now presumably the starting nickelback at UW. For Jimmy Lake, Alex Grinch is going to join the radio show next on Softy and
Dick. And one app.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Dwayne Eskridge, Seahawks second round pick, will join us at 3:45 today. So stay tuned for that. But joining us right now on the radio show, talking about the Seahawks fourth-round draft pick, cornerback Trey Brown from Oklahoma, and maybe we'll get in a couple of thoughts on the new nickelback at UW, Buki Radley Hiles, also from Oklahoma. And we promise throughout this conversation to not bring up the Apple Cup with our next guest. The defensive coordinator of the Oklahoma Sooners, Alex Grinch, is with us. Alex, thanks for doing this, and we promise no Apple Cup talk, man.
Yeah, we never cracked that code in our time out there.
You know what? You're doing some great things in Oklahoma, man, for sure. But Trey Brown, cornerback, picked up in the fourth round by the Seahawks over the weekend. When you hear the name Trey Brown, what are the first maybe memories, thoughts that kind of pop into your head?
Yeah, I think from an attribute standpoint, he has speed, and it's both in track spikes, and it's also displayed on the football field. So the film, kind of confirms, what you see at a pro day, which sometimes that's not always the case with guys. From an attribute standpoint, I mentioned that. And I think, for us, at the stage that we play on, not dissimilar to those programs that you mentioned, in the state of Washington, the lights are bright. You're going to play in some rivalry games. We play one down in Texas at the Cotton Bowl, four overtimes. Someone has to make a play, and Trey Brown, makes it to win us a football game. It's thumbs up or thumbs down at that point. There is no in between. Someone is going to have to, ultimately, be the guy that does that for you on one side of the ball or the other. And Trey did that for us. And you fast forward to the Big 12 championship this year down at Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. It's a 2-minute drive for the opponent, and in that moment, same thing. They're going to make a play. We're going to make a play to secure victory, and Trey Brown comes up with another interception. So has made some really big plays in his time here at an elite level of college football.
Coach, Trey said in his press conference that he had a coach that told him, if you aren't getting penalties, you aren't being aggressive enough. And he says he thinks he took it a little too literally. Was that coach you, or was it the DB's coach? And will that be difficult to coach out of him?
Well, it's certainly top-down, so I'll take credit for it. Mm. And I think what it amounts to as much as anything is, you know, we have the tagline, passive is a myth. And the idea that if you just stay on top of a guy, all things are going to be positive at the end of the down. And you know, oftentimes that's not the case. Whether you're sitting there watching guys catch footballs on you, or you do nothing to impede the receiver's ability to run the route that was drawn up by the coordinator on the board. And so, yep. You know, in our system, you know, Trey was asked, essentially to be on an island. He had to play the number one receiver to his side and do so in a press man situation. Not 100% of the time, but that would be the bulk of his reps, which I think is great evaluatable film for those NFL teams to see him to be put in those situations and hold up very well. But part of that, if you're going to get in another man's face, you got to be prepared to put hands on him, and that's just the reality of it. And so, you know, certainly I think that you know, the aggressive approach is the right approach. You know, certainly I'll also say that the punitive damage that goes along with it is not the same in the NFL ranks as it is here. There's a little bit more at stake when you get that flag. So I do think it's teachable. And then the biggest thing is, you know, early in the down with his elite quickness and his long speed laid the down, I think to use hands at the line of scrimmage will be a critical piece for his success.
Yeah, it's a 4.4 40 guy, and you mentioned a lot there that reminds me of the Seahawks system in your description of Trey Brown. Coach, and again, Alex Grinch, former Wazoo defensive coordinator, now the D.C. in Oklahoma, is with us on the air. We're talking about Trey Brown, who the Hawks got in the fourth round over the weekend. Maybe go into further detail, Alex, and talk more about why you think he's a great fit for this particular system in Seattle.
Well, and that's the system, you know, myself, like so many, you know, the consistency in terms of the results they've had so over the course of a number of years, you know, that film goes on each week, you know, watching the Seahawks and, you know, watching what Coach Carroll does with his defensive staff. And so not to claim by any stretch of imagination I'm an expert on it, but in the same token have some knowledge in terms of what they ask their guys to do. And I think, you know, the multiplicity that way, you know, and some of the cover three stuff, the ability to play an outside third, but do so from the line of scrimmage. And that's a difficult trait for some, you know, some individuals, and also obviously the, you know, in certain situations, more so than not, to play man coverage. And when you can play man, it really opens up a lot of the things that you do from a defensive standpoint that you have to cross off if you can't. And so I think this is a guy that I would suggest that they saw on film, one that holds up in that area very well, but has played some elite receivers in the college ranks. Obviously, the speed and all those things, and the balls come a little bit different up at that level. And so it's like anything, all these young pros, there's an adjustment that has to take place. But no, I think they see a guy that, like you said, can play on that island and do a lot of the things that they've been so successful with.
I saw an amazing stat, which is a testament to your program and a testament to the type of schedule you play in the regular season and the postseason. He has played with or against 9 of the last 13 first-round draft pick wide receivers. I mean, that is unbelievable. So how has he performed against those elite of the elite, and was there a type that he fared against better and a type that maybe he struggled against more?
Yeah, I don't think it would be as simple as to say thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, based on a specific individual. You know, I do think that, you know, the tape would show, you know, and in some of those instances we think back to LSU 2 years ago, which you know, we struggled mightily. So did everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Against that group. But if, you know, that's a real good one against Jamar Chase, the bulk of that game, and you see a guy that you know, holds up very well. That this one that you know, of all our issues, you wouldn't circle Trey Brown that night. And give him a lot of credit for that. But, you know, I just think for a guy, when you have the short area quickness to put yourself in you know, a good position early in the down. So for, at the snap of the football, he has that. And then he also possesses the long speed to put yourself in a positive situation as the down progresses. It gives you the best chance to be successful when the ball is in the air. And so in all those situations, you know, the skill set may change wide receiver wise. You know, some are the shorter, quicker guys, some are the taller guys, but has the ability again to you know, run with the guy that's trying to blow the top off, and also the agility and quickness to being a positive situation against the make you miss type of wideout.
Well, Alex Grinch again is with us, the defensive coordinator for Oklahoma. You mentioned LSU, and I'll just say this, that you spanked Florida good this year in a Cotton Bowl. You got three picks off Kyle Trask, who the Buccaneers think could be the next Tom Brady down there in Tampa Bay. So obviously you're doing something right down there, because the numbers overall for the Big 12, when we think of elite college defense by conference, the Big 12 is not one that we think of a lot. How difficult is it, honestly, and maybe this is even a testament to Trey, how difficult is it to play defense in that conference against those offenses week in and week out?
You know, it's not completely dissimilar, you know, going back to, you know, I mentioned Washington State, and kind of bring up, you know, if you go back to our initial time there, you're talking about 2015. You think about the quarterbacks that were, you know, the Jared Goffs of the world in that conference. You think about the offense and what Oregon, and obviously a more pro style offense at UW. And so in so many ways, not completely dissimilar when at a place like in Oklahoma in the Big 12, where it just seems like week in and week out, you're going to be challenged that way. And you know, by the way, again, going back to the Pacific Northwest and talking about, you know, like a Stanford, again, I go back to and been gone just a couple of years now. But, you know, it you couldn't possibly play defense in the Pac-12. And obviously there's certain programs that disproved it. And we tried, and like you said, we didn't do a very good job against Washington, but had pretty good success against, you know, the rest of that conference, even at a Washington State. So for us here, that a lot of that, and the only reason I bring that up, you know, our confidence level when we took over to Oklahoma was just that. It was, you know, if you can do it there, is there enough same as to give us a chance to be successful? And when it was specific to Trey, you know, they don't run you over if they can run by you. And so what you find out is a guy that can make plays in space. And so much of the game is played that way. Trey has that speed. He has that quickness, like I mentioned, the willingness to be physical as well. And so in an open style of play that the entire country kind of faces now, you know, guys like that are at a premium.
Coach, in August, you said a year ago he wasn't a leader by example. He had his good days, but he was too willing to just have a bad day. But all of a sudden, you're seeing a guy with just a work ethic and a want to. Why did that change happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, that would be a quote I could probably say for about, you know, 75% of the roster as they transition from a young guy to an older guy. But I would say it paints a completely accurate picture of Trey Brown. And part of that is, you know, this is an elite program at the University of Oklahoma, and historically and in recent years was not playing an elite level of defense. And so, you know, the room that he walked into, specifically the defensive back room, was one that, you know, he found his way at the top of the depth chart very quickly. And it's not because you had to beat out seven guys or eight guys. Yeah. You know, it's because you possess those skill sets that we've already mentioned. And so, you know, regardless of your performance that particular day, you're going to find, you know, there's a pretty good chance the depth chart's not going to change in the next one. And so a lot of that is understanding, okay, what's your bar? And as a young guy, that's okay to have that bar. It's not ideal, but it's probably okay to have that bar because, you know, you're trying to, there's so much from a learning standpoint and maturing standpoint that goes along with it.
Yeah.
But as you transition to an older guy in a program, if you're willing to raise that bar, and I'm talking obviously, you know, as a defense or as a program, we're trying to do that as well. But just, you know, specific to Trey, is are you going to do the things necessary to raise a bar that's not created by a teammate, you know, that is pushing you from a depth standpoint. And that was a transition for him, and one that he did. I give him a lot of credit. We're on this phone call right now because he did that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the stakes go up obviously at the next level, you know, but, I think a guy that goes with a completely different mindset than 2 years ago. Just being okay, being a starter. Now he's going to have to fight for it, and I think he has the right mindset to do that.
Well, he made, Coach, before you go, Alex Grinch again with us, Oklahoma D.C., former Cougar defensive coordinator. Trey Brown in some ways made Seahawk history because he became the first corner drafted by the Schneider-Carroll era that does not have 32-inch arms. So he's at, I believe, 30 3/8. So they changed their philosophy just for this guy. So it kind of shows you in some ways what they think of him. But, Alex, before you go, we appreciate you doing this. We mentioned at the top that we're both dog fans, all right? And I do want to bring up a Husky-related topic, but I promise you it has nothing to do with the Apple Cup and your time in Pullman, okay? We got a defensive back in Seattle who you know very well. Buki Radley-Hiles is now in the Husky secondary, and he was with you for the last couple years. Tell us about Brendan and what this kid brings to Montlake.
Well, and it... there's not a better person. He's played, again, on the same stages that I just mentioned, at a place like in Oklahoma. You're talking about playoff games. You're talking about, conference championship games. In my time here, started darn near every single one of those games for us, played well. He is smart. He's instinctive. Did I mention he was a good kid? Yeah. I can't say that enough. He is a guy that, wanted to get back on the West Coast, a guy that, we're rooting for. I don't have a negative thing to say about him. And obviously I think he went to, a great program and what Coach Lake does and the success that they've had on defense.
Yep.
No reason to not think it won't be a great fit.
Do you know more about why he transferred, by the way?
Oh, those are, individual decisions that guys make. I know he got a great landing spot, and so I'll root from afar.
Gotcha. Alex Grinch, great stuff. Appreciate this. Best of luck down the road, and I know you'll be keeping an eye on Trey Brown here in Seattle, man. Appreciate you doing this, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, thanks, guys.
You bet. Great stuff from Alex Grinch, by the way, talking about not just Trey Brown, but also Buki Radley-Hiles. Be fun to kind of see who has the bigger impact in our town, Buki or Trey.
That's a good call.
Both from Oklahoma and both playing the same position at corner. Are you ready, Dick, to meet the first member of the 2021 Seahawk three-man draft class?
Yes, sir.
Dwayne Eskridge is going to join the radio show next.
Performance.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Wheeler has the snap, play fake, guns it out to D. Eskridge, got by the defender. He may go to the house again. He's to midfield to the 40. It's a foot race. D to the 25, 20, 15, 10, down to the 5, down to the 3, 2, 1, into the end zone. Touchdown, Western Michigan. D. Eskridge, 85 yards to the house.
I love it. That is the voice of Robin Hook, who joined us on the radio show yesterday, the play-by-play man for Western Michigan University. And joining us right now on the program for the first time, the first member of the Seahawks 2021 draft class, wide receiver in the second round, 56 overall. Dwayne Eskridge is with us. And Dwayne, first of all, thanks for doing this, man. And then second of all, what does a kid who grew up in Indiana and played football at Western Michigan know about his new home in the city of Seattle?
I know little to nothing about the city of Seattle. I do know the big pointy thing that's downtown, the big building that spins around. I saw a picture of that before. And I'm learning more about the 12s and the fan base. So, I'm coming in on a clean slate to be able to learn everything. I'm looking forward to it.
So you must have some memories of that dynamic 2013 Seahawks Super Bowl champion team. What are they?
Yeah, I know all of those guys. I've watched them play and stuff like that. But I never really got too much into it when I was younger. I was always the kid that played football more so than watched football. So I was always trying to do more than I saw. But I definitely know those guys and paid attention to them a lot of years. And I always loved Marshawn Lynch. That was probably one of my favorite players ever. So I was in tune, just not as in tune, thinking I was going to be a Seahawk one day.
I assume growing up in Indiana, you were a big Colts fan. Did you have a favorite team and a favorite player that you like to kind of model your game after?
Yeah, my favorite player, I didn't have a favorite team. My favorite players was Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson. Those are my two favorites right there.
So you've mentioned Marshawn Lynch a couple of times. Obviously, you're a fan of Beast Mode. What made you such a big fan? And did you run the ball? Were you a running back in youth football back then?
Yeah, I played running back all up until my freshman year of college. So peewee, high school, all that, I was always a running back. And then once I got here, I transitioned in to being a receiver. But I always liked Marshawn, but for one, for the type of person he was, you know, I loved his personality. You know, no one could really tell him how to be him. You know, he was always him more so than anybody. And then I always just thought it was funny, you know, with him in the interviews. So, you know, he gained my respect there, too. And, you know, I always just wanted to play running back like it's just I played running back.
Well, talk about then the move to wide receiver, Dwayne. Why did you make that move, and whose idea was that initially?
I moved my freshman year. It's PJ Fleck. He's at Minnesota now, and he just always has bigger plans for, you know, the guys that are coming in, the young guys. You know, it always ends up working out for us later on in our college careers.
So was there any hesitation to move from running back to wide receiver? What were your thoughts of that move your freshman year?
I don't really have a reaction. My one goal that year was to not redshirt. So whatever way to get me on the field to not redshirt, you know, I was going to do that regardless. So I didn't really feel that type of way at all.
Well, that's a hell of a story, Dwayne. Again, Dwayne Eskridge with us, the Seahawks second-round draft pick out of Western Michigan. If I put you in a time machine, you went back 4 or 5 years, and I told you, hey, you're a star running back in high school, but you're going to be a second-round draft pick in the NFL at wide receiver, would you have bought that for yourself?
Yeah, I definitely would have believed it. You know, but I'm glad I didn't hear that early on, you know, because I was always a guy that was just grinding. You know, every year of my college career, I got better in some form or some way. You know, I just kept on working, kept on competing, being the person that I was. And then, you know, it worked out. All that stuff that I put on top of the foundation that I had built, you know, it's we're adding more to it now.
Dwayne, people like to bring up your height. Does that pigeonhole you a little bit when they say, you're a short guy, you're a slot-type wide receiver? How much does that bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me. A lot of the people that bring up my height don't play football. So, you know, I just kind of take that with a grain of salt.
Well, Dwayne Eskridge again is with us from the Seahawks, rookie wide receiver. Your head coach, Tim Lester, was on the air with us yesterday, Dwayne, and he mentioned a couple times that you would bug him and ask him to get to run the ball while you were in college. I wonder if you plan on bugging Pete and Coach Waldron to get to carry the rock a little bit here.
Yeah, I wouldn't too much bug him, but, you know, I definitely got a lot of versatility to be able to go back there and do some things, whatever it may bring. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to definitely being utilized the way that Coach Carroll and them, they've done in the past. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Coach Lester yesterday told us that he didn't have you return punts because he just likes guys to put their hand up and call for fair catches. But I know you did it in the pro day. What's your interest level of returning punts at the NFL level?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I'll be back there.
Has Coach Carroll talked to you about special teams, specifically returning punts in Seattle?
We haven't talked too much about the football X's and O's just yet. It's just more about, you know, this process right now. So once I get up there, you know, I'll be very looking forward to seeing what we want to talk about. But we haven't talked about too much just yet.
Dwayne Eskridge, again, our guest, Seahawks second-round draft pick. We all know about you playing cornerback at Western Michigan. Tell me about why that move was made as you look back on that transformation to corner for a season.
Yeah, so the team, we needed a corner. You know, we was kind of low in that depth chart on that side. And then Coach Lester, he approached me with it, and I ended up going over there my true senior year and became the best corner and the best receiver on the team. And it was a lot of great times. I liked the physicality part of it. And, you know, my true senior year my redshirt senior year, I came back playing receiver. And, you know, I'm glad I put that in my arsenal.
So, Dwayne, playing on the other side of the ball, how did that help you become a better wide receiver when you returned to wideout?
Yeah, it helped me a lot. It helped me more so on offense than it did help me on defense. They slowed the game down a lot for me. You know, I started thinking about how vulnerable a corner really is when it comes to guarding. I put the example in my head, what if I was guarding me at corner, what could I do to make me feel uncomfortable? you know, just having those thoughts, you know, it took me a long way.
There's been a lot of comparisons made. Everybody likes to see comps, Dwayne, when rookies come into the NFL, and your play-by-play man, Robin Hook, was on the air with us yesterday, and we asked him for a comp, and he said Antonio Brown. And I wonder if you think that's fair.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some qualities that collide. You know, first off, he's just a dog receiver. You know, he can make contested catches, you know, the way he plays the game. You know, so I definitely feel like it's some form of comparison there.
Well, Dwayne, another thing Coach Lester told us, that you're very, very fast, but you're not quite as fast as your buddy Levante Bellamy, who plays for the Broncos right now. Is Coach right about that?
No, he's dead wrong. But we'll keep it at that, you know. Whatever. At the end of the day, I race. I don't talk about it. So, you know, whatever it is.
What's your relationship with Levante Bellamy, by the way, Dwayne? For those that don't know, tell us about it.
That's my guy. He was there. He came to my draft party later on in the day. So he's a good dude. You know, he's been kind of kicking it for since I pretty much got to Western.
So when you're not playing football, Dwayne, what do we find you doing? What are your hobbies?
So I got two dogs. So I love just taking them out in nature, you know, being able for them to just run around and me being able to walk with them and seeing some different things. I love to fish, cook steaks, just stuff like that. You know, it doesn't take too much for me.
Dwayne Eskridge with us, Seahawks second round draft pick. Have you had a chance yet, Dwayne, to talk with your quarterback, Russell Wilson? Has he called yet?
Yeah, he had called me after I got drafted.
How was that talk with number three? Tell us more about it.
It was great. You know, he's a great guy. I can already tell. You know, he was just welcoming me to the team, you know, and he just told me, let's get to work, you know, and that's all it is. And I'm ready to go out there and work with him.
So finally, Dwayne, for those that haven't seen you play football yet, what are you going to bring to the Seattle Seahawks franchise?
Explosiveness. More than we already have at the Seahawks right now. So, you know, it'll be good to compliment the other guys' explosiveness and then to take it to another level.
Dwayne, this was fun, man. It's great to have you on. We're looking forward to seeing you in action come September. Best of luck. Stay safe, and we'll talk down the road, man. Appreciate this,
pal. Thanks,
man. Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Great stuff from Dwayne Eskridge. We'll get a break. A lot more to get to on a busy Tuesday afternoon, including John Wilder joining us on the radio show, courtesy of Simply Seattle 420, right here on Softy and Dick on 950 KJ.